The Visioneers, Episode 11, The World of the Visioneers.
Well, the world leaders are sitting stunned at the end of the Scrooge experience. They've seen horrible prospects for the future. Now what?
Well, we want to show them the alternative. Remember, Dickens said that they were looking at shades of what may be, not what will be.
And the alternative is the world of the Visioneers.
Yes. And remember that the Visioneers have been out for 6 months, so there are some things to show. So what happens now is that the world leaders in the visioneering room sit back and watch the visioneers at work. And it begins with Mark Venture sitting at this impressive communications panel in Los Angeles, calling in all of the visioneers who are all over the world, and their images come in on a bank of screens.
Yes, and they all have wonderful positive stories to tell. All over the world, activities and projects are underway. George Cardinal is full of hope, and he sums it up by comparing the spirit of the visioneers to the glorious hoarfrost in Alberta. It settles on the thin, bare branches of the poplar and birch trees and on the cold, stiff needles of the spruce. And when the sun comes up again next morning, the world is transformed into a fantasy of white crystals gleaming in the sunlight, cloaking these ordinary trees with a magic costume that settles out of nowhere, but was there all the time, only waiting for the right conditions to bring it out. I can just imagine how the world leaders must feel watching all this after what they've been through.
Yes, and then Mark brings it all to a conclusion with his stirring words in which he says, "We've come to the end of the 150 days during which we intended to raise awareness. We've done that. Now we must move to the next step. And that, my friends, is to engage people in an agenda for action. The agenda is for people to see themselves as planetary citizens. They have to see that the Earth is their planetary home and that it's in grave danger from the accumulated actions of all of us living on it. For this, we're all responsible. People have to come to realize that, to break out of their cocoons of local and national preoccupation and see themselves as a vital part of the living intelligence of the planet, and to stop acting in any way that's not compatible with the long-term future." Now, Mark goes on to introduce the idea of the Congress of the Global Mind, and he refers to the meeting of the at the UN, when there's going to be a need to get the world leaders to endorse this concept. Now, what he doesn't know, of course, is that the leaders are sitting there listening to every word that he's saying.
Well, that's very interesting. The world leaders are being given a new chance, some other place to look. But, of course, that place was there all along, in the minds of the people. You know, Des, as we're taping this, the real world leaders have just met at the Earth Summit in Rio, with variable outcomes. What if they had the model of the visioneers to look to?
Yes, that's interesting. What if they did? But anyway, now we must get along with the story. At this point, Indira Murthy reminds Mark that he has said nothing at all about his wedding to Esther, and it's coming up within the next few days or weeks. And Mark now hands over to Esther, who is speaking from Jerusalem. He switches her image up onto the large screen. She is radiant. Her auburn hair cascades around her shoulders, framing her face with a lively beauty that fills the screen with energy and seems to leap out to embrace everyone watching. Her smile shines like sunshine dancing on snowy mountains.
Thank you, Indira, and everyone for your love. Well, I can tell you with great confidence that preparations are coming along just fine. Actually, I almost believe I know less about it than the reporters who have been writing it up for weeks in magazines around the world. I get some of my best ideas by sitting down and reading what someone else says I said. It's a crazy way to do things, but I love it. And everyone's so positive and helpful, sometimes 100 phone calls a day of advice and good wishes. And you folks are going to have pride of place among the guests. All our own dear friends, the Visioneers, all coming to Jerusalem to celebrate with us. The very thought makes me tingle with excitement. We're holding it at the amphitheater on the site of the old Sultan's Pool just outside the city walls at the foot of Mount Zion. It's a magnificent setting. Everything will be outdoors. I'm sure there'll be thousands of people, and the whole world's going to be watching by satellite. I'm looking at this as our gift to the world and the world's gift to us, sharing and celebration. I can hardly wait. Make sure you all come early. I've got a special office set up for handling details, but I'll always be available to greet and meet each of you personally. Thank you so much for being our friends and supporters.
And now, with those happy words, everything takes an abrupt turn. The theme of evil striking out at good now returns.
Oh, dear, I was afraid of that.
We are now introduced to El Condor in his luxurious eyrie in Switzerland. Remember, the world leaders are watching all of this. He has a similar electronic communication set up to the Visioneers. And as we see him now, we get this description in the text. He is dark complexioned, with swarthy Latin features and a prominent aquiline nose, thick bushy eyebrows and steel gray hair combed back severely. His age would be mid to late 60s. He's dressed casually in black tailored slacks and blue cotton shirt, monogrammed with a large white C on the pocket. At his throat, a richly embroidered silk cravat hangs loosely. He presents an imposing figure of authority.
Yes, and he's joined by a woman, a kind of femme fatale, whose name is Elvira Ramos. She's in her late 40s, also of Latin heritage, attractive though slightly severe, coal black hair pulled back in a bun, wide mouth, high cheekbones, dark searching eyes under arched eyebrows. She's dressed in an elegant green and gold jumpsuit with wide flowing sleeves and loose bodice. She moves briskly across the room.
And now there's a third member to this intimidating trio, and his name is Larry Porter. He's a fat and balding man in his middle 50s. His face is flabby and sallow, the unhealthy complexion heightened by thick horn-rimmed glasses hiding tiny eyes. He wears country tweeds, rumpled and bulging about his corpulent frame.
In dialogue, we learn Larry is a defrocked American TV evangelist, now head of El Condor's or Palmyra's drug trade in the United States. Elvira is the widow of a deposed president who is using Palmyra to get back to power. Let Palmyra say who he is in his own words.
I know that there's no longer any moral authority in the world. Whatever works for the moment is right. I see it and I exploit it. I sell arms to whoever wants to fight. I buy weapons from whoever wants to sell them to whoever wants to buy them. I arrange for money to move around the world in search of the best return, no matter what the project, so long as there's a return on the investment. I run an international network of drug trafficking. I arrange for flows of public funds because there are always corrupt officials who'll take a payout for giving me control. I arrange bribes of union leaders to shut down industries and ports and public services. I buy off management to achieve the same results. I sit at tables with heads of state. I meet with religious leaders of all faiths. I give generously to charities if it pleases me to do so. I come and go in the world as I please. I'm a power broker. I understand the raw and naked grasping for power among men and women who acknowledge no higher authority than their own ambition. My enterprise is based on human greed, and it flourishes well. But I understand the limits and threats to what I do. While communities and nations are in conflict, I can prosper if they come together around a common purpose for the future. I can have some problems. And it's that understanding that now is obviously preoccupying El Condor, because he goes on to say that he's concerned about the Visioneers. He had indeed been listening in to the previous conversation that they'd had, and his anger finally results in him dismissing the other two people and he's left alone in the room to himself to await another visitor.
A new figure is brought in, blindfolded. His name is Kamil Rashid, and you will remember he was the young Arab who had kidnapped Esther and finally let her go and was having this dialogue with Mark. Well, Palmyra is trying to get him to carry out a strike against Mark and Esther at the wedding. Kamil is not interested, and the scene ends with Palmyra contacting someone else, someone called Wolfgang, to watch Kamil and to get an alternative plan into action.
Well, we leave El Condor and his schemes and go back now to Mark. And you, the listener participant here, take the opportunity now to remind the world leaders, who are the audience for all of this, of the point of what they have just seen. Without moral authority or a common vision, the world is a vacuum, open to the incursions of El Condor and his like. Into this vacuum, Mark Venture and the Visioneers are seeking to release a massive flood of human energy to build a decent future for the planet. The outcome is uncertain. You are among the most important players. Now watch as the scenario unfolds. Now, Mark talks to Peter Hemphill at the United Nations in New York, and he tells him that he intends to talk to the world leaders. Well, you can imagine Peter's reaction to that. He says it's impossible. But Mark tells him that it's going to happen and that he should book the restaurant at Woodlands for a celebration.
Well, Mark is getting pretty confident, don't you think?
Well, yes, but you know, he has a vision.
What else happens here?
Well, Peter tells Mark now that the army captain who had been responsible for killing Louis Valdez has just been given his sentence and he's been given life imprisonment. But there was no mention of El Condor. It appears from the record that the army captain was acting alone. Peter, of course, doesn't really believe that. He has a dossier on El Condor, and he agrees to forward that to Mark. Now, the scene changes again with Mark and Bill Bates going to Bill's country place at Ojai, which is just north of Los Angeles in California. And from there, he speaks to Esther on the telephone.
Yes, I remember this. She tells him she has had a message from Rashid saying El Condor plans to attack the wedding.
Yes, and Mark reassures her, but he is really not all that confident. And after he hangs up the telephone, he explodes angrily. Everyone has their cause. There are just too many causes in the world and not enough vision. The whole thing's become a stew of corruption, so that maggots like Palmyra can breed and grow, because strong people are too busy fighting for their self-interested causes. The weak ones become the victims, tossed out on the garbage heap of drug addiction and rounded up and put into armies and trained to be killers, left starving and poor while the money that could help them is laundered off into international bank accounts and poured into military budgets. And all the while, the earth cries out in pain. Men argue and debate and strut and parade and kill while the earth slowly dies around them. Paradises are turned into killing fields, or garbage dumps, or cesspools, and still men argue their petty causes, while the one great cause goes unattended, the preservation of life and peace on the planet. And who do I think I am that I can change the course of all of that? I encourage Esther to go ahead and put her life in danger, while I continue here to play on the world stage. Is it all a pathetic delusion? Are the Visioneers just a cruel dream with no substance, no hope, no promise for anything better? Have we been born only to see the final consummation of mankind's bitter destiny? God in heaven, if this is what you intend, then tell it to me now, and I'll walk away from all this tumult to spend whatever time there is with Esther in some quiet, protected place.
As Mark cries out these last words, he is looking defiantly up to the sky, fists clenched, his body filled with the tension of his mind. Behind him, moving quietly between two long rows of orange trees, a figure appears. Dressed in a simple saffron-colored robe, he comes closer. Mark turns, sensing another presence, and finds himself staring into the luminous brown eyes of Baba Satchananda.
Baba, are you really here? Or is this another of your appearances? I am always as real, Mark, as you will allow me to be. Your heart is heavy, my good friend. Why so? You're approaching your time of greatest triumph.
Well, we now get a dialogue between Mark and Baba. Baba encourages Mark. He summarizes his teachings, and he now adds a new piece.
The essence of my teachings is that people will find within themselves the all-sustaining spirit of a loving God as they turn away from self-interest and learn how to love and care for each other and the planet on which all life depends. But now I've come to add another teaching, which you must know and remember as you move on. It speaks directly to what troubles you today. It is this. The force of evil is a real force in the world, and you must be ever vigilant to restrain it. It sets the minds of men and women against the pathway to the light. It entraps them in the snares of self-interest and blocks them from the flow of love, which is the dominant force of the universe. You and the Visioneers must be forever vigilant to see the force of evil for what it is. It can never prevail, for love is more powerful, but it can damage and destroy. You've begun your work. It's positive and bold and will bring a new renaissance to the world. But stand vigilant against the force of evil. Confront it whenever it appears, and call upon the limitless power of the love of God flowing through the universe as your strength for each encounter. I'll leave you now, my good friend, and follow in my heart as you journey to your triumph with your band of Visioneers.
Well, now we get a new twist, a very dramatic effect. The world leaders are shown Mark and El Condor side by side in a bare concrete building. El Condor speaks.
It's a question of staying the course. I've got the world under my feet, and I can tread wherever I choose. What matters now is that we keep building, staying one step ahead. America is solid, Europe and Japan almost in place, Asia and Africa waiting to be plucked. Everywhere, opportunity opens up. The world's an open door. People are easy prey. They'll do anything to get what they think they want. They'll tear each other apart if they have to. The leaders are puppets, dancing on strings, trying to hold on to power, willing to do anything to stay on top, while their opponents scheme to topple them, stopping at nothing, turning a blind eye to everything when it suits their purpose. Politics, industry, business, the arts, even religion, it's all open to me now. The world's an empty void, and I mean to fill it with my enterprises.
Mark Venture speaks.
We have to give people hope. We've made a start, and it can run like wildfire. Getting the image right is the key. Once they have the vision, then the rest will follow. Without vision, there's just an empty void and all manner of corruption can slip in. It all comes back to spirit, recognizing the human energy coursing through the world, tapping into it, focusing it around a vision of common purpose where everyone can play a part. We have to touch people in their hearts, in their deep internal wisdom, getting down below the blockages of their ideology and their limited beliefs.
El Condor continues.
Men are basically selfish and will cut each other's throat for what they think is a slice of the main action. Women are the same. Give them a piece of privilege and they'll trample each other into the dirt to hold on to it.
Mark Venture cuts in.
People are energy systems. They'll come together and move with great power around a vision they believe in, around an enterprise of value, around a cause that gives them hope for a worthwhile future. We must tap that in spirit and give it the leadership it needs.
El Condor speaks.
Most leaders are corrupt or corruptible. All they want is power. I can play them off against one another like children in a candy store.
Mark Venture interrupts again.
The supreme motivating concept of the future is synergy. Men and women of all nations coming together under leaders of great vision.
who see that the pursuit of a common ideal, one world, one earth, one people, is the reason for all existence.
El Condor again.
The world is flying apart. People are the instruments of their own destruction. I can reap rewards on every front. It's all open for the taking.
Mark Venture answers.
We're at the birth of a new renaissance. The moment of breakthrough is at hand. The visioneers are on the move. The world lies open for fulfillment.
El Condor.
In the end, power is all that counts.
Venture.
In the end, love will bring in peace.
In the end, all of us must choose the way of El Condor and his like, or the way of Mark Venture and the Visioneers. The last words are spoken by yourself. You have stepped on stage in a central spotlight between the other two. They turn, and without a further word, exit separately by the way they had come. The lights come up, and you stand alone in the stark concrete room facing your audience. I stand here in this bare place, symbol of the prison of our thoughts, unless we break free to create a sweeter space. You have it all now, the bitter course of human development to today, and where that course unchecked will take us. You have caught, too, a glimpse of the alternative, empowered human beings of every land, breaking free of bondage of the past and present and traveling forward into a future of synergy and vision. You were brought here as leaders of the nations on this planet to see the choice. Soon, you'll return to your own assembly, and there you will make your choice by what you decide or don't decide to do, and by how you act as leaders to your people. And now, I bring this session to a close.
And we come to the conclusion of the peace with the world leaders. The mentors come back to send them off.
Charles Dickens gives them a wonderful visualization of the world as a marketplace. Close your eyes, he says. Let your minds slide along sunbeams of light. And he takes them to a marketplace, full of sunshine, filled with throngs of people, streaming around stalls with colored canvas tops. And the counters are piled high with everything. There's fresh fruit from every country, apples, cherries, strawberries, and raspberries. And there are grapes, piled high in bunches, red and green and black, bursting with the sunshine that warmed and ripened them, and oranges everywhere, and pineapples lined up like squat plump soldiers, and again nuts and berries and jams and pickles and honey and candies and chocolates and cheeses and coffees, and the air is filled with fresh baking, the aroma of yeast and flour is exquisite, tantalizing us with long loaves, short loaves, baguettes, buns, and bagels. And that's just the food. Besides that, there are clothes and crafts of every land and products of every hand, of mind, of eye, of machine, all for beauty and pleasure. And there is buying and selling and trading, and especially people enjoying the fun and the energy and spirit of living. And outside the trading area, people sit in coffee shops and restaurants and meeting places. All kinds of people, every nationality, every ethnic group. They speak in many languages. They listen intently. They're learning from one another. Their dialogue is intense and passionate and lively. Let's listen in.
And they all speak of one place, the assembly, the world assembly of the people. In many languages, they refer to it as the center and the source for coordination, the source for information, advice, and encouragement. And each group speaks of itself as an assembly, and a center, and a source. And they speak of the network, the grand interlinkage of all the assemblies and centers and sources into a great buzzing central nervous system for the planet, working to keep the Earth safe and healthy, planning step by step to bring all people on Earth good lives of prosperity and satisfaction. And after the meeting and the dialogues come the celebrations. Men, women, children, all mingling together, singing, dancing, feasting, telling courage stories of hope and achievement and success. See the costumes, hear the music, listen to the laughter, feel the excitement dancing and darting, bouncing and bobbing, weaving its wonderful magical spell over people who've come together in spirit and fellowship and a sure sense of life that's full, growing, and well worth the living. These are the people of the earth, our future world, the world of the visioneers, everyone a visioneer working with each other to nurture and sustain all life while our knowledge multiplies and grows.
Well, now Anne comes in. You remember her. She was Anne of a Thousand Dreams, modeled on Anne of Green Gables, a character put out by Lucy Maud Montgomery. And she adds her piece.
And she's talking about learning centers, great learning centers that cover the world.
Look, we can see them in every city and town and village in every country. The world has become a great learning place, and the children are moving around, traveling, visiting other cities, other countries. And they're having conferences on large television screens all around the world. Children from Africa, India, China, America, Europe, Australia. Children of all ages and many colors, they're talking together about the earth and how they're caring for it and how everyone is doing. Is there enough food in your village? What can we do to help? We've got a new plan here. Do you think it will work for us too? Can you come and show us? How are things back in your neighborhood? You should see what we've done. There's fish back in the river now, and we can go swimming on the beach again.
And now John Kennedy is back on stage. His voice is strong, powerful, reassuring, filling the room with energy and excitement. This is the hour of vision, the time to see beyond all time past into a possible future. Look with me now and see the bounty of a new kind of leadership for the world. See yourselves coming together into the General Assembly of the United Nations and saying to a listening world, we, the leaders of the free and independent nations of the earth, see that our common welfare lies not in the strength of our military might or our economic production, but rather in the spirit of cooperation that we can fashion from a forge of optimism. We see the world is weary of the old ways of conflict, greed, and aggression. There's no future in that. The earth is trembling. People are afraid. Even in the richest countries, they cry out in anger and frustration as things crumble around them. Hope has been snatched away. Time has come as a thief in the night and stolen away hope. Now our task is to bring it back. We know that we must move beyond current policies and beliefs to find a new understanding. This is the age of learning. We, the leaders of all the nations on earth, commit ourselves to bend every effort, to grasp each opportunity, to focus all resources on building a fellowship of human awareness across the planet. Together we can continue moving into the future as one great band of resourceful travelers, accepting with every step the responsibility of sustaining the rich and fragile heritage that God has given us on this, our planetary home.
As President Kennedy sends out this ringing challenge for a new kind of leadership for the world, he is joined by the oldest warrior of them all, Winston Churchill.
The time has come to choose. You can either look backward to past folly or forward to future enlightenment. Where we have been as a ragtag collection of feudal states and tribal nations can no longer be regarded as any acceptable measure of where we must go. Make no mistake. There is a dark cloud hanging over the prospects for humanity, heavier now than any we have ever known. To chart the direction, to steer the course, to give heart to all who are embarked on this perilous voyage, this is your responsibility. In leading, your strength will be in following. In accepting power, your role will be to empower. In giving direction, you must learn to take it. There is a current now flowing through the minds of individuals in every land, which, if brought together, can become a tidal force of energy for the new age. You have been shown here the briefest glimpse of it in the enterprise of our visioneers. Before you returned to your own endeavors, you will be given the opportunity to support or hinder that enterprise. You have seen the alternative. Now you must decide how you will act. But as you go, let me say one word more. The building force of collective human consciousness, of which our visioneers are the symbol and the portent, is irresistible. It issues from the universal source for survival. It can be fought. It can be diverted. It can be restrained. But it can never be overcome. Your individual moments of truth, now upon you, demand decisions on how you will act to support or retard this swelling wave of human consciousness for survival. In your own hands now lies the choice.
Churchill finishes his address in characteristic defiant surveillance of his audience, fixing them with a steely, steady gaze. Before there's a chance for any reaction, Charles Dickens appears again, stepping up beside the others and addressing the world leaders with a theatrical sweep of his flowing cape and brass-tipped walking stick.
So now the time has come to test your learning. We're sending you out to the world of the Visioneers. You came here by way of a silver bridge from your own assembly at the United Nations. Now you'll leave through a golden arch to an alternative future.
As he speaks, the huge globe that has hung suspended in space throughout the presentations now dissolves. In its place, a golden arch appears, rising tall and brilliant to the ceiling. Through it, a translucent glow shimmers mysteriously. The heads of state shift uncertainly in their seats, glancing at each other uneasily, wondering what next they can expect from this drama in which they have been caught up. Charles Dickens continues.
Go now. Go out from this assembly. Go your various ways into the world of the Visioneers. We send you out into the glow of future possibility. Step through the arch and take the learning you've tasted here with you. When the time is right, you will return to your own world. But for now, you have the opportunity to play on a different stage. On the other side of the arch, you will find the General Assembly of the United Nations. But not as you left it. It's 2 days earlier, and you have a decision to make. Will you entertain a presentation from Mark Venture concerning United Nations support for a Congress of the Global Mind? Go now. The world and the Visioneers are waiting.